Do we ask, do you have any concerns about that? Do you have any, see that as a potential problem in the area?
What I think of, when I think of the word deduction, this is off the top of my head, I don't practice in that field, but what I think of in the sense of a deduction is an ongoing, not a one time, but an ongoing process that occurs every paycheck. I think if that were a concern, what the employer and employee might do is a payment in cash, for example, if the time the loan is due. I suppose it could be a concern, but I'm not sure too often.
It's right on the record, it's not intended to establish anything.
The language on lines 10 through 12, page 4, I'm sorry. Page 4, lines 10 through 12. There are cases where a mechanic would work in a garage and have his coveralls or rags. They are his property. They are given back to the employer for the laundry service. The laundry takes care of it, brings the rags back, or the coveralls back. The employer may make a deduction from the employee's paycheck to cover his laundry costs. The ultimate recipient of that deduction is not the employer. That's what I intend. That these things are not kept in the employer's pocket. Automatic coffee service is between deducted from certain employees at certain terms. So $2 a month and $5 a month, that goes to the XYZ coffee service. It doesn't go to the employer. It's just convenience where all the employees have agreed to pay for the service and be able to pay the deduction.
Is this the problem that you have? Is then that when money is withheld and then used to purchase stock or in some kind of a trust arrangement or something like that, that this language that is not withheld, is not the employer, that's where your problem is?
That's where the original problem was, because when we looked at that, we saw that it would be arguable that money withheld would be for the benefit of the employer as well as the employee. Right. It's a purchase of stock, and the employee becomes an owner of the company, or part of an owner of the company, whereas the company gets the money, and it will use that money to its benefit. So that's why the existing amendment, as it came from the Senate, didn't take care of our concern. Therefore, Bruce and I looked at it and figured that it would probably be best to put what we were aiming at in the preceding subsection B. And so we would fall under subsection B, but we probably wouldn't, under the employee stock purchase plan, fall under subsection C. However, those are in the disjunctive. So any one of those is sufficient to provide an exemption.
And so you feel by B, with authorizing writing by an employee, then that covers you from that could be contradiction in C?
Yes. What I'm trying to say is we would not, or we may not be entitled to an exemption under C, but because we would be entitled to an exemption under B, it would be sufficient.
With the amended language.
With the amended language.
Okay, let's do a conclusion here. The chair would move the amendment. Is there any objection to it?
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Motion on the floor.
Chairman ready.
I would move Ann Gorsen. Bill 209 is amended to the vote of the on the
day. Okay. One question, I'm sure that the last answer is not proper maybe, but this would not have anything to do with restitution. The employee has cleaned out the bill and left. This would have no, I mean, without signing off,
yeah.
I mean, it's not a factor, is that right?
That situation might be a factor in this law. Obviously, the remedy there is to the city.
Let's follow up.
Gold?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Karen?
Aye.
Parkinson?
Aye.
Lyle?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Fred?
Aye. Who would like to carry? Fred?
I don't think I'll pass on this.
Thank you. It's too many pages of the consent calendar. Senate Bill 236. Keith and F. R.
Thank you.
explained before, but I'd like to take less than a minute, hopefully, to tell you that we see this bill as a fundamental tenet of the way public assistance programs are administered in this state. When a person is injured in an accident, they're frequently offered compensation for that accident, which they feel is less than satisfactory. Public assistance laws of this state allow us to carry those people on public assistance pending the settlement of that claim. And when the claim is settled, the state recovers from a court on behalf of the taxpayers that insurance benefit that the person gets. This is also true in the area of workman's compensation. When an injured workman believes that the pro-offered settlement is inadequate to the injury, a person can receive public assistance while litigation is pending. And then if the person receives a settlement, we are, under present law, prohibited from recovering those costs that we have paid out that permitted the person to carry out litigation in the first place. All this bill does is ask that from lump sum settlements that the state recover the costs that it incurred on that person's behalf. The issue here is one of whether or not we're going to reduce the public assistance benefits for other recipients, or whether we're going to take that money away from people who are in fact giving double benefits, one for public assistance and second from accepted claim. As I understand it, that there was, there were technical questions raised at the last hearing. We've worked with the Mr. Green and his staff. We believe those technical problems have been settled. We see this as an extremely important issue. It's worth $220,000 of general funds to us, and those of you who are familiar with condition of our budget and like the condition of it, know that that is a significant amount of money which we think can be used for the most poor of our people rather than to continue to allow the practice of some people getting the money twice. Mr. Kane has given to Mr. Kopetsky the proposed amendments that I think clarify just exactly what claims it is we can go after and also settle a couple of other technical issues.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Mike Kane, manager of the Income Maintenance for the Adult Family Services Division. At my testimony on the 22nd of June, several questions were raised in terms of the language on page 2, lines 4 through 6. Which we believed at that time would clarify the fact that we were not trying to recoup our expenses from future benefits that would accrue to the injured workmen. Several members of the committee and Mr. Kopetsky questioned the language in that section in terms of its clarity. Because of that, we met with Mr. Young from the Workers' Compensation Department, and I think better clarified the intent of the division in this respect. The language presently in Ann Gross, Senate Bill 236, is written in negative terms, in the sense that the division shall not attach to weekly benefits to meet certain ongoing needs and settlement payments. That language was confusing, and the present amendments, I think, clarify it in the sense that it says that we will only attach those benefits that are wage loss claims and are medical expenses which have accumulated during the period between the date the claim is denied and the date it is accepted. So this would be a situation in which claim is initially denied. Normally it takes quite a long period of time to settle the claim. When it is settled, we would attach to the retroactive benefits that were paid to the workmen for the cost of cash and medical assistance. The amendment on page one eliminates from the lien process the workman's compensation department itself. With my discussion with Mr. Young, workman's compensation still pays some amount of benefits relating to vocational rehabilitation services, and it's not the division's intent to attach money paid for that purpose. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, sir. At the present time, I guess I'm speaking of other than recipients from your department. At the present time, are any other creditors of the claimant permitted to attach any of that?
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, the existing law precludes that. This law, this change, this bill would allow us to proceed on that basis.
Only the department within the region.
That's correct.
If we were to be establishing a special classification for CHR, not for any other potential creditors of the person involved. Am I correct in that?
That is correct.
Rather than a precedent setting piece of legislation, correct?
I'd like to comment that what we're asking for here is not to collect monies that person might have owed us for some other purpose. But rather the fact that we have advanced taxpayers' money so that the worker's claim can be protected. And having done that, and then the worker having prevailed in that claim, that the taxpayers' money be given back rather than the worker have both the claim and the taxpayer dollars. I see it as substantially different from, let's say, a person having broken out a window of one of our offices and we attaching his claim for that purpose. I'm talking about only the taxpayer dollars that were specifically paid that permitted the person to hold out while the claim was being protected.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I'm not necessarily arguing the right to recoup the money, and I have deepest sympathy for the financial pride of Department of Human Resources. But I guess I'm beginning to question the method that's been used in this bill. That's what I'm
saying. Okay.
The method rather than the content.
A little scenario. Let's see if I've got a question on that. Presently, a worker has a $10,000 bank account. He's injured. He has a disputed claim. While this process is going on, he has to live until he spends all of $10,000 bank account. He has a claim. He's successful. He gets a settlement. He pays back his bank account. And would that be kind of what we're talking about here?
Exactly, Representative Clark, Mr. Chairman. It's a very apt analogy indeed. If I could go one step further, say the same scenario that you represent, and he wipes out his $10,000 bank account, and then comes to us, and taxpayer dollars permitting it to continue, and then he gets a $10,000 settlement. Under the current law, he can replenish his bank account and not the general fund. This would say, give the general fund back that amount of money that the general fund spent, and the balance can then go back into the bank.
That's
Do you know how much money we're talking about?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Representative Springer, $220,000 in this biennium, double that in succeeding biennium.
I guess this is more a comment than a question. I would have to guess that any worker is represented by an attorney, but that's not all. amount that my team could be selling for. They're going to try to reach a settlement or seek an amount that's going to, you know, push up the taking into account the claim that you're going to have, which is obviously going to impact on the workers' comp system. And I think we have to appreciate that effect in terms of dollars.
Well, we have some other folks that are going to kind of testify. Okay, thanks, Steve. Thank you very much. Carl Frederick, Steve Philcox.
Frederick with Associated Oregon Industries, and we would speak in opposition to Senate Bill 236. We have not seen the amendments, but if I follow the gist of them, apparently there's still an attempt to get reimbursement, and would diminish, in our opinion, the we consider the inviolate state of the workers' compensation payments, and the same types of same state exists with unemployment insurance payments. These are designated for certain purposes, and we feel that they should remain inviolate. Remember that in this issue, incidentally, we discussed once before, there's some time ago, about 34 hearings ago, I believe, of 2,600 with respect to the reimbursement of the private carrier. And I think the same arguments would apply. I honestly think that this would have a kind of a chilling effect on the encouragement of settlements and this type of thing. And remember, you're only allowed to settle a case under 656-289 when there's a bona fide dispute of compensability. And these are the types of cases we're talking about. We want to encourage those people to come out of the litigious process. I mean, there is no admission of compensability when the settlement is made. It's an bona fide dispute. Agreement and a lump sum is paid. And again, I think the same arguments that were used in the wisdom of this committee in rejecting the argument that there should be some type of reimbursement or payback in this case, I think, should apply in this type of case.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Steve Silcott, Oregon AFL-CIO, we also oppose Senate Bill 236 for much the same reasons that you've already heard. We regard workers' comp, unemployment insurance, and so forth as being traditionally exempt from these sorts of liens. Now, this bill came out of the Senate Committee on Human Resources, and we also put it on the Senate side. But without getting into a lot of details, we offered the same opposition.
I must say, I'm really surprised. Maybe you see it as you pay it in, so part of the price you get in business is the equity of allowing someone to use the taxpayer's money without any repayment, regardless of cause, but as long as he was getting a settlement and he isn't going to have to pay it back unless there is a settlement, it was hard to understand. And maybe from the general fund and people you represent, like paying into that fund, I wonder why you feel so strongly. You say your general things, yeah, but I thought you could be strong.
As I say, it's as far as I'm concerned, this parallels the same situation we had with respect to the repayment of the off-the-job carrier, health and accident, whether it's a case pending a determination as to compensability or non-compensability. Remember that the determination is a dispute at compensability, so the final resolution is that this was not a dispute, and at least it recognized in the settlement that it was a non-compensable claim. So I don't have that.
There are two options occurred, and that is that the amount should come out of the top fund and work for 2 days, so that they have been paid, another option might be that those cases were, I certainly wouldn't support either of them, but another option might be that, we would, those cases where people applying for general assistance would not qualify if they had a claim pending. What you're saying, we shouldn't spend it, we should spend the public's money.
That latter suggestion might be a good idea.
I couldn't support that, though, because that's what we put in charge.
Worry whether or not these people do make an inquiry, the agency does make an inquiry, do you have a workers' compensation case in hand? I don't know.
Just in general public policy issues, I couldn't support that. The person might be starving. We can't have that. If it does occur, you need it. If you're willing to take the public time to support something, to oppose something like that.
Well, I look at the broader picture. The system we're involved in, and as far as I'm concerned, the elimination of the litigious process, which I should be
understanding the type of that, I guess.
Is it the end of the day?
I said maybe it would be.
What recourse do you have now? Can you sue to recover?
My only point is that the type of settlement that is permitted under the workers' compensation, and the apparently the target area they're talking about is the disputed claim, that's defensibility. And there's never a true admission that this is a defensive claim, it's just an agreement that there's a question of compensability, no admission of it. So maybe these payments are warranted. And the same argument you use with respect to the repayment for Medicare. See any distinction. Once you open the door in this area, who knows? I just feel that these payments, as unemployment insurance payments, should be invited.
If I may, please refresh my memory, but I think we've got a similar issue or had that in Judiciary Committee as to child support payments.
That's correct.
And I wonder, how we decide that child support payments are less deserving of the same kind of exception against the workers' comp claim. I think my fear is that, talk about the proverbial camel's nose under the tent, how can you say that one is a more legitimate purpose than the other? I just really do have to hold the door shut on this, I think.
We can't close nose
under the
tent. I started much earlier saying that I perceived the problem, and I think it really is a problem, but this is not the way to solve it, and it's, unfortunately, it's not early enough in the session, I imagine, to be creative enough to take the time to do that, possibly, unless someone comes up with a brainstorm today or tomorrow, but I just really resist the same idea that others have been expressing, which is attaching to
you accept the motion on this bill, Mr. Chairman?
Depending on what the motion is.
The motion will be to table.
Let me, before we do that, because that's not debatable on the part.
from the testimony we've heard, that $200,000 isn't very many of the workers. I think if I were a worker out there and I exhausted my savings to live on, and yet my worker down the bench didn't have been fit yet to save the damn dime and spend his college paycheck, he's treated different than I am. Because I would use my savings to live on, while he hasn't. The settlement comes, he's just treated different. I think he's a special class of citizen because he's doing well here.
That's some Ken.
You accept this? I move to table Senate Bill 236.
Motion is on the table. Let some Ken move to table Senate Bill 326. Clerk call roll.
236.
Gold.
236.
Aye. Johnson.
No.
Karen.
Aye.
Parkinson.
Aye.
Ryan.
No.
Springer.
Aye.
Chris.
Aye.
I think we need to have a meeting with the policy committee. Are you alive?
I'm ready.
First invitation I ever had, though.
Jim, I'm ready.
203?
Yeah.
Let's go to Senate Bill 203 for this one. Okay. Senate Bill 203. The question I had there was on those dates, on deleting those dates.
I checked on that this morning, Mr. Chairman, and there was a misinterpretation on the effect of those dates as part of the current law in RS 237-153. It would be contradictory to the extreme to delete those two dates where they appear in the proposed amendment, and I would not move those as part of the amendment. However, in the undated amendment, proposed amendment to Senate Bill 203, which adds a subparagraph A and makes the current F a subparagraph B, I would I would move those as amendments to Senate Bill 203.
And that's it would read then, the new A would read simply before July 1st, 1973, may be considered as follows: A, boom. And
if, yeah.
B would become,
and
or
B,
F would,
F
become
F would then become D.
And scratch these,
scratch those
deletions of the date.
That's
so
right. Scratch them.
Much better. Much better.
Okay. Now I have a note from Legislative Fiscal. I don't know. Has the rest of the committee been apprised of that?
We haven't seen that.
Okay.
We were told it.
They reported that there is no fiscal impact to Senate Bill 203, and further, Sue Wilson in my office went back and investigated with Mr. Mall, that these folks had made the appropriate PERS contributions. Okay. So I think if we would just leave those dates out, everything would be just fine.
Okay, Rep. Karen moves the amendments to Senate Bill 203. Fred, you've got them, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Clerk Colwell. Are there any objections to the amendment? Okay. Rep. Karen moves Senate Bill 203 as amended to the floor to pass recommendation. We don't need to print it in gross, do we?
Well, yeah, you probably do.
Yeah, we better.
Yeah, you probably do, because it's an enrolled bill. We better re-engross it.
Right.
That would be re-engrossed in rolls.
Right. First of all, it's
enrolled.
It's A enrolled.
Yeah, A enrolled. Yeah.
Karen?
Aye.
Parkinson?
Aye.
Ryle?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Chris?
Aye.
I'll carry that. I'll be. Where's some Karen's book? Here I am. House Bill 2882. Let's take it right away.
You need a motion to bring it back?
Yeah.
You do?
Right. Or Senator Karen's moves.
No, I didn't say that. No.
Chair moves.
questioning.
Can we reconsider House Bill 2882? Clerk, call the roll.
Aaron?
No.
Markinson?
I can't remember what the debt is doing back here, but should have voted aye, Mike.
Trust me.
Aye.
Ryle?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Just a question, is this the third time we've had this back in the floor?
It's called the yo-yo bill.
No, we've already designated, this is yo-yo one, I think, or yo-yo two.
Yo-yo two.
Otto Wilson. Mr. Lansing? Scotty Ferris?